Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Idaho is now in session pursuant to law.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate you being seated. Welcome to the Idaho Supreme Court again, sitting at the University of Idaho today, April 9, 2025, for the second hearing in today's calendar. Now, this matter is entitled State of Idaho versus Misty Dawn Rose, case number 52062. The appellant, Misty Rose, is represented by Justin Curtis, the State of Idaho respondent represented by Ken Jorgensen. Any preliminary matters for either party in this matter?
No, Your Honor.
Very well. Mr. Curtis, sir.
May it please the court, this is a consolidated appeal of two cases in which the district court revoked Ms. Rose's probation and executed her underlying sentences. The claims in this case are that the district court revoked her probation based on allegations of probation violations that were either not noticed up or were not willful under the circumstances of the case, and I'll address both of those. Because I think this case is probably more factually intensive than legally intensive, I will focus more on the facts of this case today. So this case began, well, her cases began long ago in 2018, 2019 or so. This case begins in June of 2022 when the district court placed Ms. Rose on probation following a successful writer. And the court placed her on probation with the condition that she go into drug court. And the court specifically said that there would be a term of probation to attend a probation review hearing on July 21st, 2022, approximately a month later at 11 a.m. And that if she was not accepted into drug court, that would be a violation of her probation. About 2 weeks after that, Rose's probation officer sent a progress report to the district court judge advising the district court judge developments in Shoshone County concerning a felony charge, and noted that there were attempts to serve a summons on her, but it was ineffective due to the fact that she was incarcerated on a writer, and apparently they couldn't serve her while incarcerated on the writer. So at the July 21st, 2002 hearing, Ms. Rose did not appear. And the district court asked why Ms. Rose was not at that hearing, and counsel represented that Ms. Rose had gone up to Shoshone County to deal with the issues relating to those warrants. There was both a felony case and a misdemeanor case. Apparently, warrants had been issued on each, and so she was up there dealing with that, and that's why counsel explained that she wasn't there at the hearing that day. At that point, the district court said it was not going to enter a bench warrant at that time, but continued the hearing and stated that if she's not here at the next hearing and doesn't have an acceptance into drug court, she's in violation status at that time. So the next hearing in the case occurs on August 11th, 2022, and this time Ms. Rose appears at that hearing. The judge inquires at that point whether or not she has been accepted into drug court, and Ms. Rose represents that she has not. And the reason is that she can't get in to the Kootenai County, that she's tried to get into the Kootenai County Drug Court, but she cannot. And at this point, the court initiates probation violation proceedings against Ms. Rose and alleges that she's violated Condition 29 of her term of probation. And again, that Condition 29 was attend the probation review hearing July 21st. If not accepted then into drug court, it's a violation of probation. But what the district court tells her is that she has violated Condition 29 by not being accepted into drug court by July 21st. The court then kind of arraigns her on the allegation. The court says, as to the allegation that you violated terms and conditions probation number 29 by failing to be accepted into drug court, do you admit or deny that? And she denied that. So then the case proceeded to a probation revocation hearing, and this occurs on September 6, 2022, and at this point the court hears evidence about whether she's violated her probation and then goes on to have a disposition hearing where the court eventually revokes her probation that same day. And As I say, in this case, it was the court that was initiating probation violation proceedings. It was not actually the state or the prosecutor that was doing so. And so we're going on what the court noticed. And so at the evidentiary hearing, the state just calls Austin Turpin, who is Ms. Rose's probation officer, who testified that she's generally been, she has actually been in compliance with probation, but she has not been accepted to the Kootenai County Drug Court Program, and that she had applied both before she was placed on probation and applied after she was placed on probation and was told that she was not eligible. Then the defense calls Michael Smith, who is the Shoshone County Drug Court.
Just an important thing. My understanding, her lack of eligibility for the Kootenai County Drug Court was because she was in recovery, she had relapsed recently, and so because of ASAM considerations, she didn't qualify. Is that correct?
That's correct. Her treatment level and her treatment needs did not justify, it did not allow her to come into that program. And yes, the record shows that essentially, yeah, she had been clean for too long to be accepted into the Kootenai County Drug Court Program. So, in order to be accepted in it, she would have had to relapse.
Was she a level 2.1 or 2.5, do you
know? Off the top of my head, I don't remember, Your Honor. So then the Shoshone County Drug Court coordinator came in and testified and said that she was just legally disqualified from participating in Shoshone County Drug Court because the Shoshone County Drug Court was only a pre-sentencing drug court. Obviously, Ms. Rose was post-sentencing. There's nothing that she can do about that. And so that's why she was not accepted into Shoshone County. Then the defense called Angela Reynolds, who actually was the Kootenai County Drug Court Coordinator, and she again confirmed that she did not meet the treatment level. She also mentioned that she doesn't qualify because she lives in Shoshone County and you have to be in Kootenai County. She left out the possibility that a person could be rescreened for Kootenai County, but again, rescreening wouldn't change the effects or the results if your treatment level didn't change, and obviously there's no reason to think that Ms. Rose's treatment level changed. And then finally, Ms. Rose testified, and she testified that she was trying to get into both Kootenai County and Shoshone County Drug Court. She contacted both and was denied at each. But she was taking steps on her own to deal with her issue. She had contacted a place called Ideal Options and restored PABs and started treatment at Ideal Options. She was doing UAs every week. She was otherwise in compliance with probation. She was residing in Shoshone County, staying with her parents. And she had been helping out her parents and testified that she could go to work, plow driver, doing landscaping, mowing lawn, working for other people. Had been taking antidepressants to try to quit smoking. And was overall doing well, but again, could not get accepted into any of the drug courts. Regarding her failure to attend the July 21st hearing, she testified that she was trying to go to that hearing, but the morning of that hearing, she went to Shoshone County to deal with the outstanding warrants from the cases that I mentioned earlier that had been sent in the progress report. She said that she had contacted a bail bondsman and was told that it would be a very quick in-and-out process. She could go up there, get folks be in and out, and that would be that. But she testified that the bail bondsman was over an hour and a half late. She ended up getting booked into the jail. And obviously, once she was booked into the jail, she could not leave the jail until she had dealt with the warrants. And it just took her far longer than she anticipated and couldn't make it to court that day. So considering that, Ms. Rose has raised several claims on appeal. The first one I'll mention just kind of briefly because I think the state essentially concedes it, which is the district court found willful violations both of her failure to get into drug court and failure to appear at the July 2022 hearing. Defense counsel below obviously informed the court that her failure to get into drug court was not willful because she was legally disqualified in Shoshone County. And due to her treatment level, was disqualified from Kootenai County. There was no evidence that rescreening was going to assist that in any way. So we argue an appeal that is a non-willful violation. Pursuant to Rule 33F, the court cannot revoke unless there is a willful violation. The state concedes that this was not a willful violation. And so I think we should get a remand just on that issue by itself. And so unless the court has questions on the drug court program, I'll move on to the other one. So we've raised two challenges to the other one, which is first that the district court never actually alleged it as a probation violation. The two times that the district court mentioned it to Ms. Rose, he did mention the term of probation, which addresses both going to the hearing and not being in drug court, but both times the district court specifically limited the allegation to failing to be in drug court. And so it's our position today that the district court limited itself to one allegation, and under Rule 33F, the district court must provide notice of any allegation that it intends to proceed on if it wishes to revoke probation. And because the district court was very clear that it was only proceeding on the drug court issue, that the court cannot revoke, or the court never even noticed the hearing date as a probation violation allegation.
So is it your position then that the only notice of the new probation violation, failure to appear at the earlier hearing, was brought up at the September 6th hearing on the probation violation?
Correct. At the August 11th hearing, which is the one that directly preceded it, the court specifically only mentioned the drug court issue.
Did the fact that the court issued a bench warrant on August 11th for her failure to appear at the earlier hearing not constitute notice that the court was deeming that a violation?
I admit I had not looked into that. I don't think so, because the court still had every opportunity to tell her that, you know, based on that bench warrant, I'm also alleging a second probation violation allegation, and the court didn't do that.
I mean, and when the court issues a failure to appear bench warrant to a person that's on probation, I'm just wondering if that satisfies the notice requirement.
I don't think it does, unless the court then says, I'm finding this, or, you know, I'm alleging this to be a violation, so you have an opportunity to respond to that. As I say, like, the district court had every opportunity to tell her that there were multiple reasons that the court wanted to revoke probation in this case and specifically didn't do so. And so I think just by doing that, I don't think that put her on notice. But even if this court finds that, you know, probation or the term 29 is broad enough to encompass both and that she was on notice for both, we would also assert that her failure to appear at that hearing was not willful either. She clearly willfully drove to Shoshone County in the morning, but she did not willfully fail to appear at that hearing. She was under the impression that it was a quick in and out process at Shoshone County, that she could go up there, the bail bondsman would be there, she would take care of the warrants, she could be gone, she could be back at the hearing on the day that she was supposed to. The delay in the bail bondsman and the delay in the booking process was not something that was known to her. It was not something that she could foresee. She did testify that she dealt with these warrants on the first day that she could. She couldn't deal with them earlier because she didn't have the money to do it. She actually got up to Shoshone County and realized she still needed more money and had to borrow money from her father in order to deal with it. So I think the record shows that she was dealing with the warrants as soon as she could to take care of them. So it's also showing she's trying to, you know, get her affairs in order. And, you know, maybe it was, you know, bad planning or something, but it was not a willful violation to fail to appear because she was taking earnest efforts to deal with that. And so I think the record shows in this case that we have one non-willful violation. We have another violation that was either not noticed or is not willful. And in that circumstance, if the court finds that both of them were non-willful, or that one was non-willful and one was not alleged, we would just ask this court to vacate the order revoking her probation and put her back on probation. If the court does deem it necessary to remand this case, we would ask that it be remanded in front of a different district court judge. There's case law from this court and the Court of Appeals about this judge kind of making repeated errors in the same sentencing and probation contexts. Particularly when it comes to, like, Fifth Amendment issues. In the Reed case that the Court of Appeals reversed a couple of years ago, the district court made the same kind of same mistake with regard to willfulness, where the defendant was ordered to complete a substance abuse training, and the record showed that the defendant just couldn't afford that and couldn't get in, and the court determined a willful violation anyway.
Is that issue possibly moot?
I'm not privy to whether the judge is on, I mean, are you asking about retirement issues?
That judge is retirement. I'm not certain of the timing.
I'm not certain of the timing either, nor am I aware of whether he intends to remain as kind of on Plan B status until and takes certain cases or not. So, I mean, it may very well be moot. If it is, obviously, this court doesn't need to deal with it, but I'm not in a position today to know exactly what the district court's plans are. But if it's not moot, we would ask that it just be remanded in front of a different district court judge. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
May it please the court. The issue before this court is a probation violation and the revocation of probation. I'd just like to add a little bit to my friend's summary of the procedure here. What he gave was accurate and thorough, but there are a couple of other points that I think are also important. First off, the probation violation that led to her to Ms. Rose being on the rider in the first place was the discovery of methamphetamine in her room. She was originally charged only with possession of paraphernalia based on the baggie. However, and the state waited until the testing of the baggie was completed before charging a felony. So she was already in the penitentiary on the rider when the separate county, Shoshone County, charged the felony. What happened after that point is that the state issued a warrant for her arrest on the new felony charge on February 15th, 2022. This was while she was still in custody. She was released from custody on the current and extant probation order on June 22nd of 2022. She later testified at the hearing that she was aware of the warrants in Shoshone County at that time. So basically, she knew for a full month before the review hearing of the existence of this warrant, yet chose to drive the 90 miles to take care of this warrant on the day of the hearing.
90 miles from
where? I believe that it's 90 miles. This isn't necessarily in the record. This is just something that I would take, but from Moscow to the courthouse in Shoshone County, the jail in Shoshone County, it's about 90 miles.
So she was in Moscow?
Or excuse me. You know what? I'm a little confused as to the exact locations, but I believe that they should be in a different county.
Yeah, Coeur d'Alene to Wallace is 45-50 miles.
45-50 miles.
Right.
Okay. I will defer to your much greater knowledge of the geography of northern Idaho. So about 45 miles, so about 90 miles both ways.
But she also testified that she didn't have the money.
Correct.
To deal with the warrants until that morning.
Correct.
And so my understanding was she wanted to get those resolved before she showed up in court for the hearing.
That is what she testified to, and I would like to address that very specifically in just a minute. I'm not deferring any question here, I hope, but...
I'll throw you off of your flow.
No, please do. I don't flow very well anyway. Anyway, so the probation condition in question was imposed at the June 22nd hearing. It was handwritten in condition number 29. So she didn't appear at the bench warrant. We've gone through all of that history. And... the part of the transcript I would refer the court to, it actually precedes her denial of the probation violation. So my friend has relied on page 30 of the transcript where the court took her denial and specifically asked about the drug court. And so her denial was based upon the drug court. However, a couple of pages earlier than that, page 28, lines 15 through 24, the court stated, quote, "You have violated your probation as set forth in term and condition of probation 29, which reads," and the court read the entirety of it, including the portion about the failure to attend the review hearing. So at that point, although he did not take a denial directly from that, he did specifically tell her that she had violated her probation by not attending the review hearing. And one of the reasons we know that she knew that that was part of the allegations against her, the probation violation allegations, is because she then went and presented evidence at the hearing. So she got that notice from somewhere. She wasn't presenting evidence of what happened.
But wasn't that a summary finding of a violation? Without giving her a chance to admit or deny, without giving her notice, it was just court summarily finding a probation violation?
Not at all, Your Honor. This was at the admit-deny hearing that he told her that that was one of the conditions. He did not take a denial directly after telling her violation of 29, and then he omitted that portion of 29 when he took the denial.
So he didn't give her an opportunity to admit or deny?
Arguably, yeah. I mean, if that were the issue on appeal, that you never gave her an opportunity to admit or deny that particular one, I think that that's more or less borne out by the record. But he did tell her that you violated your probation by doing this, and then took the denial but omitted some of the language from Condition 29 when he took the denial.
That just seems like a strange procedure. I mean, even when we do summary contempt, a defendant is entitled to a little more notice than this defendant got.
Well, I would submit that this was the notice. This was at a prior hearing before we actually had the evidentiary hearing. This was at the admit-deny hearing where the court did tell her that it was all of 29. He just didn't take the denial in direct response to that. So I would just encourage the court to read the entirety of the transcript of that admit-deny hearing, because the court does say, as part of the allegations against her, a violation of Condition 29, and then he reads the entirety of it.
Right, but then at the end of that statement, he talks about, and I verbally pronounced that requirement, singular. And then he proceeds to immediately turn around and only allege she violated by failing to be admitted into drug court. So I read the part because I was curious to see what happened, mm-hmm. You know, get the full story. But I'm struggling with how that is reading of that term does anything to specify which parts of term and condition 29 he's alleging she violated, especially when at the end he refers to requirement singular instead of requirement multiple, that you be here and that you be admitted into drug court, and then you follow on and he only alleges she violated by not being admitted into drug court.
Well, yes. I mean, if we read that transcript with that level of detail. But again, she was hearing this orally. And I think that one of the biggest evidences that she knew that this was part of this was because she put on evidence. If she had no idea that this was even on the table, why is she testifying about this incident, about these facts? The fact that she put on evidence strongly, I would suggest, suggests that she knew that that was part of what was going on at the hearing.
Could it just have been in response to the no bond bench warrant that was issued?
I'm not sure if that was even an issue at the evidentiary hearing. In other words, it wasn't an argument in relation to a bond reduction or anything else. It was an argument actually at the hearing on whether she had violated her probation. So, yes, could the notice have been a little clearer? Well, yeah, if we're reading it with that level of detail to where we're making a determination of, well, there's no plural S at the end of the word condition. I mean, that's the level of detail you're talking about here.
It's not just that.
Not just that.
That combined with the statement a page or two later where he says, and I'm alleging you violated your condition probation by doing this, failing to be admitted. And
yes.
You're arguing, no, he gave notice because of this statement. And I'm just saying, I think it's charitable to say it's ambiguous. I'm just not sure that somebody in that hearing would know, even though he asked me to admit or deny one thing, I should know he's also alleging I violated my probation this second way.
And I'm really not denying a degree of ambiguity. There is a degree of ambiguity. I mean, whenever the court says, you violated your probation by X and Y, and then says, do you admit or deny violating your probation by why? That's going to create ambiguity.
Except that's not how it happened. He said, I'm alleging you violated by not meeting term and condition 29.
Which reads?
Which has two things. He never specifically says, I'm alleging you violated by not being here. The question is, when he says, you violated by not meeting this term and condition, and he reads the term and condition that actually has two conditions in it, and then he asks her to admit or deny one of the conditions, was she supposed to understand he meant actually both of the conditions?
Right, and I think that the record could be reasonably read either way. However, to me, the added part was that she then presented evidence of this. Which, if she had no notice, why is she presenting evidence of this?
An abundance of caution, not knowing.
Possibly. But I think at this point, when we're talking about appellate review, we're not reading the record as opposed to what the district court did. We're not assuming the district court erred and then I have to demonstrate not. It's the other way around. So, yes, there is some ambiguity in this record. However, it does not rise to the level of showing reversible error on the notice provision. It's not like the state was putting on evidence of her missing the hearing and there was an objection saying, wait a minute, that's not even before the court right now. There was no objection at any point. So the defense at no point said, well, wait a minute. Why are we talking about this? Rather, it was the defense that jumped in with both feet and presented evidence of it. And now I'd like to kind of circle back to that question you asked me about her evidence. Really, her argument on appeal assumes that the court believed Ms. Rose's statement. Now, admittedly, hers is the only evidence about what her thought processes were, is the only evidence about her interaction with the bail bondsman is the only evidence about when she had the money, all that sort of stuff. But it depends. The district court gets to weigh that evidence. It gets to reject that evidence. It gets to say, you know what, I'm not sure I believe you.
Did he ever say that?
He did not. But he never said he believed her either. And given that we have a multiple time probation violation person who's been back in front of the court, at least some dose of skepticism might be called for.
So if you're weighing evidence that was submitted by a defendant against no evidence contradicting it.
Correct.
So the sole basis then had to be credibility.
Right.
Did that require anything from the court to make a finding, I do not find this witness to be credible?
No. I know of no legal requirement that the court actually say what credibility it ascribes to any particular witness. And by the same token, finders of fact, judges and juries, get to reject evidence. It's not that this court as an appellate standard or any court as a trial standard says, well, you know what, if person X says fact Y, and there's no contrary evidence, I have to accept fact Y.
Well, given our conversation on the last case about how you sometimes wish the record would be better, certainly this case would be very different if he had made a finding of credibility. But instead, it appeared that the court believed what she said and just simply found that it wasn't a good enough reason. Isn't that a fair reading that the court, I don't see anything in here suggesting the court didn't believe her. It's just that he didn't think that that was a good enough reason, that he still thought it was willful because of her poor planning.
Well, that's not exactly the way I read what the district court's comments were. I think that that's making some inferences that aren't necessarily there and don't necessarily support its decision.
What inferences am I making?
Well, the inference that the court believed that even if everything she said was true, it was still willful.
But he didn't nitpick and say, this isn't true. He treated her.
He did not.
He treated everything she said at face value and just said it wasn't good enough. Is that
I'm not sure I would read the record that way. Obviously, my reading of the record counts for very little. But what we have from the court is not any sort of detailed statement about what it did or didn't believe what facts it specifically found or didn't find. It just said, you violated by not appearing.
Again, I want to be right. I don't want you to needlessly defer. I mean, if there is something in the record that suggests that the court disbelieved anything she said about her explanation, I'd sure like to see that in the record.
I sometimes don't defer even when it's needful. The only point is that, yes, we need to look at what the district court actually said, but we need to do that in the context of this court's review. This court is not going back and reviewing the initial evidence. It's reviewing what the district court did with that evidence, and it's measuring its sufficiency for what it did. And so under that standard, then, we would not infer any sort of factual finding in favor of Ms. Rose that wasn't in fact made. In fact, we would infer the opposite. So I
struggle with that, Mr. Jorgensen. I found a spot in the transcript. It's on page 70. And the district court is discussing the reasons for what it's doing. And he's explaining the first time this issue of these other charges is brought up is to explain why she, in defense to Ms. Rose not being present for the July 1st, 2021 probation review hearing. So I find it's willful. She wasn't here, and that's of her own doing, not having dealt with those. That issue, which was existent even before going on the record. So I do find that both allegations have been proven. I'm not seeing where he doesn't believe her. He's just saying, you chose to take care of these that morning, and that's on you that you weren't here.
Right, and the evidence suggests she knew for a month. And if the court is finding you could have taken care of this prior to the day of.
But he doesn't exactly say that.
He doesn't exactly say that, but I think that's a fair inference.
All he says is not being here was your own choice. And my worry is that's a negligence issue on her part because she thought she'd be out in time. She had been told it would be a quick in and out as opposed to a willful. And so talk to me about that. What's your position on this was negligent and wasn't willful?
Well, I think that might be a rather fine distinction. In other words, if she chose to delay this in a way that reasonably prevented her from complying with the terms of probation, then I think that is adequate to find willfulness. In other words, if a probationer makes a series of bad choices, knowing that the possible consequences of those choices are going to be a probation violation, a willfulness finding is appropriate. It isn't just enough. Again, your negligence standard assumes pretty much everything the way she said it and doesn't give any sort of leeway to the district court statement that effectively this could have been handled at an earlier time. It was the choice to handle it on the day of rather than the day before that is effectively the demonstration of willfulness.
Mr. Ferguson, I'm wondering to what extent, and I'll preface this by saying I'm struggling with my wording here, but to what extent do we have a ruling that is based on the district court's adamant position that if this probationer is not in drug court, she's not fit to be on probation, therefore it's a foregone conclusion. In other words, do you see where I'm going?
Yes, I do. And if I may, Your Honor, I believe that goes to the state's harmless error argument because we have acknowledged that the failure to get into drug court was not a willful violation. So it's basically a harmless error argument in the sense that still gets to be considered at the later phase. In other words, you can't violate the probation because of it, but you still get to consider it in terms of whether probation is meeting its stated goals of protecting society and rehabilitation. So it is properly considered in that context that she can't get into this program. In other words, if the court believes that this program is essential for her rehabilitation, and that is not available to her, the court can make a finding that probation is not achieving its goals, despite that not being her fault. It has to be a willful violation under our rules, but it doesn't have, but it doesn't, nothing limits the court's consideration of whether what to do with a disposition to only willful violations. It can be, the court at that point can consider anything that's relevant to the question of, is society protected and is rehabilitation being accomplished? So the court's belief that any probation violation would have ultimately resulted in execution of the sentence based upon this is entirely proper.
If the district court was incorrect, erred, in revoking probation based on the failure to appear, and we have that same question, do we ever get to this point? I mean, I'm not wording that very well. If the district court erred in revoking probation based on the failure to appear, could he revoke probation?
No. No, we have conceded that. To me, it's a very interesting question because the rule requires a willful violation before probation can be revoked. That's not a constitutional standard. It's not, to my knowledge, a statutory standard. And in fact, the standard prior to a case that led to the change in the rule was that, in fact, you could declare a violation on a non-willful or you could revoke probation on a non-willful violation as long as that violation rose to a standard of where the court believed that society wasn't being protected or that rehabilitation wasn't being accomplished. And in fact, we have a few cases that predate the amendment to the rule that basically have upheld probation revocations in that situation, especially where we have a situation where a person just is mentally, for example, incapable of accomplishing probation. The state chose not to raise that in this case. We do acknowledge that under the rule, the willfulness element is a requirement that would apply to the case. We kind of reserve to ourselves the right to argue that that's not always going to be the case, but this is not that case. This is not that case where we would choose to make that argument. So we have conceded that it does require a willful violation. We know that one of the violations found was not willful because she did everything she could do and just didn't qualify. The other violation, if this court concludes it was not willful, the state would concede that the appropriate remedy at that point is to reverse and remand.
I worry if we affirm the decision of the district court in this case that we might be creating some kind of perverse incentive for defendants not to comply with warrants in another county. Idaho is a state with 44 counties. Even in the rural areas of the state, it's very common for a defendant to have a case pending in a nearby county. In places like Ada County and Canyon County, it's extremely common to have defendants that have charges in Napa while they have charges coming out of Boise. Mm-hmm. If we say that the failure to appear at some proceeding because you went in to deal with the case in another county is grounds for a willful probation violation, isn't that going to create not only a nightmare scenario for defendants, but for prosecutors who are going to start having to charge all of these probation violations?
No, Your Honor. And to use a phrase that I've heard you utter before, it would be a very different case, for example, if she had been picked up on the warrant and involuntarily arrested. It would be a very different case if she had handled this warrant 2 days in advance. These are fact-intensive cases. Regarding willfulness. And so what we have here is the facts that she had almost a month to take care of this warrant in one fashion or another. She could have gone and turned herself in on the warrant immediately and then asked for a bond reduction. She could have handled this in so many different ways.
But doesn't that illustrate perhaps the unfairness of this? If she had been picked up, let's say she had gone to Wallace to visit a friend and an officer saw her recognized that she had a warrant and arrested her. So she would have been arrested not because she complied with the warrant, but because she got caught. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't be treated as harshly as in this case where she voluntarily went in and submitted to the warrant. And because she voluntarily went in and submitted to the warrant, we're going to hold her to a higher standard? That seems perverse to me.
Well, we're holding her to the willful standard and whether or not it was willful. And the timing, I think, is very important here, that she had quite a bit of time. I think the fact that we're relying entirely upon a possibly non-credible witness's version of how events went in Shoshone County is relevant to that determination. She could have just, this was an 11 o'clock hearing, would have been done by noon, and then she could have gone and turned herself in. There were a whole range of options available to her.
But at the end of the day, at least in this judge's view, she would have been better off if she had flaunted the warrant than if she had complied with it.
Well, she would have been better off, obviously, if she had not violated her probation terms in the first place.
Yeah, if she wasn't a criminal, everything would be better for her, wouldn't it?
But yes.
But she violated some laws, and she had some bonds. She went to take care of
right.
it, voluntarily submitting herself to the jurisdiction of the court, and we're going to treat her more harshly than if she had just flaunted and not even gone in and tried to address it.
Well, I would narrow your concerns even further, and it's the timing of when she did it that really is important here. She could have done it immediately afterward. She could have done it in the almost month she had beforehand. It was really her decision to try to handle this out-of-state warrant on the morning when she had an 11 o'clock hearing.
Out of county.
Out of county. Right. So she's trying to handle a warrant in another county on the morning of an 11 o'clock hearing. Now, I know we might not put the punctuality standards in relation somebody who is in the criminal justice system as opposed to somebody who represents people in the criminal justice system. But, you know, I would hesitate to stand in front of a court and say, I didn't make your 11 o'clock hearing because I told another court I could handle a hearing at 10 o'clock, and that hearing went over. I thought it was going to be a five-minute in and out.
Don't we have to look at this, though, from a real-world perspective?
Oh,
if
yeah.
she had not gone to Wallace and submitted herself to the warrant, if she had stayed in Kootenai County,
right.
if she had showed up at the hearing like she was supposed to, I'm pretty sure there would have been some light flashing on the judge's Odyssey computer showing the pending
yep.
bench warrant. She would have been immediately taken into custody at the conclusion of the hearing
correct.
Because there was a bench warrant pending, and she would have ended up in jail ultimately in Shoshone County as happened in the case.
Very possibly. But she would have been at the hearing, and if she would have chosen to handle it that way, she wouldn't have violated her probation.
But it's not unreasonable for the defendant to have tried to take care of the warrant to avoid that outcome, which is, now, yes, she
yep.
could have done it sooner. But from her perspective, certainly it was a rational choice, wasn't it?
Well, not necessarily. Well, I question from her perspective whether that is contrary to willfulness. The point I want to make here is that really this is something that is in her control. This is something that she had some say over. Now, it didn't go according to her plan, according to her testimony, if that is accepted. The court wasn't obliged to accept it. The court wasn't obliged to conclude that this was a good faith effort to deal with this warrant preceding this hearing. Again, this wasn't a hearing on anything other than review. So it would have been also entirely reasonable for her to go to that hearing and say, I've been trying to get the money together. I think I've finally done that. I've arranged with a bail bond warrant. And as soon as I leave this courtroom, hopefully not in handcuffs, I'm off to Shoshone County to handle it. That would have been a far better choice. So, yes, we are looking at her choices and the willfulness of those choices and the conflict of the results of those choices in her not being at a hearing she was specifically ordered to be at. And ultimately, that's why the district court correctly said this was a willful violation, And that is why the state is requesting this court to affirm.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, how much time does the appellant have remaining?
16 minutes, Your Honor.
Thank you, sir.
I actually have nothing further unless the court has any questions. So I would just ask that this court issue an order placing her on probation or remanding this case in front of a different district court judge. Thank you.
Very well, sir. Thank you. Counsel, each of you, we appreciate your argument time here today. This matter is now under advisement. We will render a decision accordingly. We'll be in recess for approximately 10 minutes.
All rise.